This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tighe. Thanks for tuning in today. Many people in the Milwaukee area see big potential in water. With the largest source of fresh water in the world as our neighbor, the Milwaukee area has been touted as a potential world water hub, a center for water-related research, innovation, and industry. Advocates say work done here could have an impact on a global water crisis and a local economic one. During the course of this week, Lake Effect and WUWM News are examining the possibilities and limitations of a water economy. Today, we begin our Project Milwaukee, the Currency of Water series by getting a historical perspective on the region's intimate relationship with water. Historian and Lake Effect contributor John Gerda joins us. Nice to see you. Welcome to Lake Effect.
Thank you, Mitch.
It doesn't seem like a stretch to say that water was one of the key drivers of immigration here, but even before Lake Michigan allowed for people to come here, how significant were the water resources in this area to people who already lived here?
They were certainly essential. I mean, water is the foundation of all life, and for the natives who made their homes here, the Potawatomi, their neighbors, you know, the Ojibwe, the Sauk, the Fox, the Odawa, they were people of the canoe, so they used water for transportation. Obviously used it for sustenance, but also one thing that makes Milwaukee quite unusual compared to other cities is that most of the downtown area, all the Menominee Valley, Walker's Point, Third Ward, it was underwater. This was a wetland. And the word Menominee, as in our Menominee Valley, is derived from Menomen, which is the Algonquian word for wild rice. So it was a source, not just a way to slake your thirst, but a source of food, you know, and it's a grocery store, Menominee Valley and all these other wetlands in the Milwaukee area. And there is one theory no one really knows, because there wasn't a dictionary, you know, back in 1625 saying, look up Milwaukee and see what it means. But there's one theory that Milwaukee is derived from a word meaning wetland. So water was, in a very literal sense, the foundation of life here.
Well, and it's just amazing to think of, you know, you drive through the Menominee Valley now, and it's sort of amazing to think of wild rice growing there. And
hard to imagine. And some of the old maps, it'll be, you see maps with railroad tracks and tanneries, foundries, and so on. In the middle, it will say shallow water. So it took a while, you know, beginning back in around 1869 to fill all that in.
Well, you mentioned tanneries, and that's a good segue. What have been the key industries in Milwaukee from the early days that have depended on water?
Most of them. Maybe flour milling did not, because you wanted to keep that as dry as you possibly could. But even before water helped to shape industry, it was the reason people got here. When you look at Milwaukee on the map, the fact that you had this all-water route to all points east meant that where the Milwaukee River met the lake, this was the best natural harbor on the western shore of the lake. That's why Milwaukee is where it is. And in those early years, until railroads came in the early 1850s, it was water that brought them here, first schooners and then steamships. And then when Milwaukee began to industrialize, early on, we were a port city, and that was obviously another water-based part of the economy. And wheat went out, raw materials went out, finished goods came in. But then when we began by the 1860s and 70s to be less processing and more manufacturing, as the economy changed, water was essential for most of the industries that made their homes here. But the two that were probably absolutely dependent were tanning and brewing. And the tanners, Milwaukee by 1890 was the largest tanner of leather on the planet. And names still familiar, Pfister and Vogel and Galoon and Trostel, know those were all German entrepreneurs who brought skills from the old country and made their livings here and made fantastic livings by supplying the need for leather for especially shoes and boots. And what they would do is they would harvest these mountains of what they called tan bark. And it was largely hemlock, which is a very thick bark tree from northern Wisconsin and upper Michigan. And there's some of these wonderful old photos of the tanneries in the Menominee Valley with these stacks that were probably 50 feet high of these big slabs of bark. They would chip the bark, and in these enormous vats, they would brew it. It was almost like a tea kettle. And when they were done, what they had was a substance called tannin, know, which is why you see the kind of root beer colored waters up north. It's all tan and it's leached from the leaves and branches and trunks of trees up there. And they called it vegetable tanning. I'm not sure a tree's a vegetable, but before they moved on to some of the synthetics, that was the way that they turned raw hides into leather. So they used huge quantities of water. Beer, obviously, was absolutely dependent on a plentiful supply of good water. And interestingly, before there was mechanical refrigeration, it was water in its hard form that was just as important, ice, that was harvested on the Milwaukee River, on inland lakes, in places like St. Louis and Cincinnati, which were also German capitals and therefore producers of beer. They had long, hot summers, so by the time August rolled around, they were running out of ice. So the fact that Milwaukee had kind of this inexhaustible supply of ice in a colder climate was really essential to the early brewing industry. Beer is, I think, what, 92% water? So you had to have a plentiful source of good water. Milwaukee was making, I think by 1900, we were doing about, 2.5 million barrels of beer a year. So that was certainly hugely important.
Were the two industries ever at odds? I mean, the brewing industry needed this really pure, good water, and the tanning industry, as a result, put out some pretty horrific water. Was that ever an issue?
Brewing was not environment neutral either. When you had some of the waste material, the mash, from the mash tuns, when that was deposited and sat there for a little bit, that got fairly odorous as well. So it would be used for by the farmers for feed. But there were complaints. I think Miller out in the Menominee Valley, there were complaints about how that was being led into the Menominee River and thereby compromising that already very compromised stream's water quality. But it was not so much, it was the Milwaukee River, the lower Menominee, those were the ones that became really putrid. And the breweries depended largely on sources of well water. So it was kind of the deep groundwater.
The water quality issue in Milwaukee that's probably still freshest in people's minds is the Cryptosporidium outbreak in 1993. But you talk about how horrible the water was in many of the rivers and potentially along Lake Michigan. What was the catalyst to start cleaning those waters up, and when did that happen?
The public disgust over the what they call the river nuisance was an obvious catalyst, and not just the aesthetic reaction, but people were getting sick. You have back in the 1880s, there was one visitor who talked about the Milwaukee River as the yellowish, murky effluvia of 1,000 sewers. And that was probably an understatement. What would happen when you have all this pollution, and some of it was industrial, like a tannery or a brewery or other kinds of fairly heavy industries, but a lot of it was at a time when horses were the means of transportation for individuals, for streetcars, for carriages. They were the trucks, of their time. So you had tons of manure, that just plopped onto the streets every day, and the next rain took it into the river. So you have both the aesthetic and the public health hazard. So beginning in the 1880s, is long before Cryptosporidium, when people began to say we need to do something about it. But what they did was where Altera Coffee is down there on the lakefront, that was what they still know as the flushing station. They punched a tunnel underneath the east side, and in that building at the foot of Lafayette Street, they put the largest water pump in the whole world and used the fresh lake water to flush the putrid river. So it was the flushing station. A little ironic that there's kind of a high-end coffee shop. They're pushing another beverage. But what they did was they pushed all that pollution out into the Milwaukee Harbor, and that's our source of water. So you have, they call it intestinal flu, it's typhus. You have people getting sick, people dying because of the waterborne pathogens.
It strikes me that effluvia sounds like it could be a high-end brand of coffee.
Or beer.
Well, any place you have a huge supply of fresh water, there are going to be pressures on it from places that don't have such a large supply, and that of course, was one of the key drivers of the Great Lakes Water Compact. But have there been historically efforts from other parts of the country or the world to tap into what we have here?
The big one is Chicago, which is a neighbor, and they reversed their river, and if they had not, the whole southern half of Lake Michigan would be dead, and we face severe threats now with invasive species. But if the Chicago system, especially before sewage treatment, if that had all been pushed into the lake, you know, it would have been just an environmental disaster here. It became a disaster downstream, down the Illinois system. So they were the first diverters, and there were people in Milwaukee who really, you know, tried to oppose diversion of Lake Michigan water, you know, down the Illinois River system. But there was not, I think, until the last 20 years or so, there was one company that proposed filling empty tankers with Great Lakes water and shipping it to places, you know, the Mideast, where there was no water. And that really raised some hackles. The first person that I think of who kind of really talked about the role water plays in this region economically as opposed to other regions was Lee Sherman Dreyfus, you know, the governor, who talked about, it was a great line. He was obviously a kind of great communicator. He talked about Wisconsin as the OPEC of water. And you know, that was certainly an advantage in his mind. But attempts to divert it have been met with fairly entrenched resistance. And the compact, finally, the people who have the same resource in common, the same vested interest, have begun to realize that we have kind of a shared fate here.
Well, and given your knowledge of the city's history, both economic and social, what is your assessment of this drive to, nobody's talking about the OPEC of water now, but we hear the term Silicon Valley of water. What is your assessment of this drive to make Milwaukee kind of a world hub for freshwater research and technology?
I think it makes economic sense. I think maybe 20 years ago, there was the hope, the aspiration that we'd all become high-tech, you know, become the Silicon Valley of Silicon Valley here in the Midwest, and or Route 128 in Boston, you know, these kind of technological corridors. And when you look at the industries here in Milwaukee, like brewing, like tanning, you know, there were technologies that developed here for everything from pumping to metering that were allied with those industries. So we've got the track record, we have the tradition, and we have some of the players as well. And I think there are limits on how much a city can promote itself into economic prosperity in any field. The market, you know, I think drives a lot of this. But the fact that you have a critical mass of water-related industries here, you've got research going on at the Great Lakes Institute, the Water Institute, there are already players here. There's already a presence here. So this is not by any means building from scratch, inventing whole cloth. So I think it's a well-placed initiative, and I hold high hopes for the development of greater scale and more jobs.
Well, John Gerda, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Mitch.
Milwaukee-born writer and historian John Gerda is a regular Lake Effect contributor. He's the author of 19 books, including The Making of Milwaukee and his latest, One People, Many Paths, A History of Jewish Milwaukee. Tomorrow on the show, M7 Water Council co-chair, Badger Meter CEO, and leading water hub proponent Rich Musin on what he believes the water industry here could look like. You can find links to all the parts of our water series on the Project Milwaukee page at WUWM.com, including today's news reports on how the conversation to create a water industry in Milwaukee got started. Also, an examination of the global water problems that are in need of solutions. This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio.